south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. You know, I got a lot of emails from people after I did that show talking about Muslims and Arabs and the Middle Eastern population here in Latin America. Now, one listener who lives in Brazil. And you know, Brazil has the highest Muslim population in Latin America, 1.5 million of them. He says he's not happy about it. He sees them all over the place now, not like years ago. Anyway, he also says, of course, everybody in Brazil now knows about that 72 virgin thing. By the way, he's a Canadian who works in the oil field business. He said before he was in Brazil, he was in Saudi Arabia doing the same kind of work. And there, most of his company workers were Canadians, including a few women. He said behind closed doors, they spoke of terrorism and the Muslim faith quite a bit. You know, would it ever hit Canada? Because Muslims are pouring in there, too. Anyway, he said when the question would come up, the Canadian woman would always say, by the way, with some disgust, especially the lady who was an obvious feminist and never let anyone forget about it, she'd always say, what about those 72 women? Don't they have any free will at all? Are they just kind of materialized for the benefit of Allah's male martyrs? What about Allah's female martyrs? Anyway, all kinds of questions would come up. Of course, we're talking about fantasy land and all that. Though I'll never forget what that Canadian lady said. She said, if I was a Muslim and I died in the service of Allah, I certainly wouldn't want 72 guys. That would be the definition of hell for me and practically every woman I could think of. With that, the emailer said to her, what would be fair? What would you want? She said, I'm a simple person. How about 72 pairs of shoes? So what's this got to do with Latin America? What am I bringing this up for? Well, it's because I'm always talking about boots on the ground here in Latin America, right? And I'm not metaphorically speaking here either. I'm talking about actual boots on the ground. Nope, not sandals, Nikes, Hush Puppies, penny loafers, or Crocs either. I mean real boots. It's a prerequisite to finding out what it's really like to live, work, play, and or hang out here in Latin America. But ladies generally don't like to wear boots. Not the poop kickers we're talking about anyway. When ladies think boots, they're thinking high heel boots. So then is it boots on the ground for guys and high heel boots on the ground for women? Well, ladies, that is a good look, but not recommended. Not down here. Now, of course, for my expat insider seminars, I always discourage the ladies from bringing down high heels. And it's not because they're rare or little used down here. It's just the opposite. Every Latin lady has a very nice selection of high heels, and I'm talking very high heels. Yes, even way out in the boonies, the indigenous ladies in their typical indigenous clothes have a couple of pairs of high heels in the closet. You'll see them in full force on special occasions. And that's even though the roads and sidewalks are absolute minefields for anyone who hasn't got a completely stable shoe. We're talking about basic brick-and-mortar infrastructure failure on a large scale here. Yes, when you're walking, you have to keep your head down and your eyes open at all times, or else. And of course, it's true down here, every time you see a government building a road or a sidewalk or whatever, any kind of public project, it looks good for a year or two. Everything new does, including cars and apartments and houses, etc. But these things degrade rapidly, and after a year or two, they always seem to fall apart. The people down here are so used to that, they don't even complain. Now, I'm sure you've heard that universal axiom that money can't buy culture or taste, which is why when you walk into a wealthy Latin's beautiful home, at least it's beautiful on the outside, great garden and all that, you'll often wonder why a guy with money like that would let his house deteriorate so. The fact is, I've been in many million-dollar homes where I wouldn't want to sit on the furniture. Even though most wealthy Latins have at least two full-time maids, a gardener, a maintenance guy, and a 24/7 driver. Speaking of drivers, or chauffeurs, as they call them down here, if you ever had a chance to get into a wealthy Latin's car, same thing applies. Though they might have a late model Audi, BMW, or even Porsche Cayenne, you'll notice right away that even if it's only a couple of months old, there'll be scratches here and there, the headliner will be scuffed, and there'll be stains on the seats and carpeting. I've seen it myself many times. In fact, just last week I was in a Costco parking lot. I saw an upscale Latin lady get out, open the door, and whack the new SUV right next to her. And both cars were shiny new. Nope, she didn't bat an eyelash. She just proceeded on into the Costco. And by the way, she had high heels on. Yep, Latin ladies are absolutely in love with high heels. Now I ask you, how many times have you been into Walmart or Costco or Office Depot and have seen ladies all decked out in high heels? Well, you see that all the time down here. Of course, they do it for the guys. It's a macho society and guys love that kind of stuff. But also because Latin ladies are, as a rule, a couple inches shorter than first world ladies, height, or altura, as they call it here, is a very important component of a person's self-image and self-esteem. In fact, there have been times when I'm sitting in a Latin person's living room and they're watching TV and some beautiful girls are on the screen and one or more of the ladies in the room will make a point of criticizing someone they believe is too short to be on TV or too short to be famous. How do you like that? I know that sounds crazy, but it's true. In fact, they even talk about height discrimination down here. In fact, it gives new meaning to the phrase tall, dark, and handsome. Because down here, for a guy to be in great demand with the ladies, you don't have to be dark or handsome, just tall. And look out, gringo males and females, if you throw in light-colored hair and clear eyes, that would be blue, green, or gray. Man, in the love and romance department, you're playing with dynamite. You already knew that was part of your gringo advantage, right? But that's a topic for another show. We're talking about infrastructure, roads, and sidewalks, and high heels. And it's true, even though lower middle class Latin girls, even poor Latin girls, might only have three pairs of shoes. That would be sandals, flats, and a pair of high heels. Those three things, plus a purse and a cell phone, comprise your basic survival kit for the average Latin girl who takes the chicken bus. And now that the third world has discovered WhatsApp, that's turned out to be a gift from heaven to Latin girls who are always dumping money into their cell phones for calls. But the strange fact is, as ladies move up the social economic ladder, it's not more flats and sandals, it's more high heels. And of course, a bigger, better cell phone. In fact, there are some Latin ladies that just won't go out of the house without their heels on. You see them all the time standing around waiting to get on the chicken bus. And millions of others who walk out of the house in their flats and get on the chicken bus, all the while carrying their high heels around in a bag for a quick change later when they get near work or school or whatever. I can't tell you how many times I've heard first world gringa expats make comments about the high heels that Latin girls are wearing. Why? Because they're always shocked and dismayed by the conditions of the streets and sidewalks. They say, how can they walk in those things? And worse, many downtowns and historic districts in Latin America are cobblestones. Not only are they terribly uneven to walk on, in the best of cases, they're always popping out because they're set improperly. Reason number 2,326, why it's never a good idea to drive at night. One of the only things that's more dangerous than driving at night is walking in high heels at night. Though you should know that nothing will separate a Latin lady from her high heels. And as for you gringo ladies who do come down, you too will have high heels. It's inevitable, right? But do be careful. A friend of mine down here is an emergency room doc. He says the number one reason for emergency room visits is high heel accidents. Just kidding. It's motorcycle accidents. Gotcha there, huh? In fact, he says, get this, in those crappy, ill-equipped, stinking public national healthcare hospitals, during work hours and rush hour traffic, fully 75% of the admissions are due to some kind of motorcycle accident or other. If that doesn't surprise you, this will. In those private, first-world-style hospitals where you actually have to pay to get treatment, you'll rarely see the victim of a motorcycle crash. Why? Because the national healthcare hospitals are free, and motorcyclists don't carry insurance. In fact, only about 1% of them carry insurance. And that 1% are wealthy Latins who have motorcycling as a hobby. They're weekend warriors with Harleys and Ducatis and BMWs, etc. So, the doc says, public emergency rooms and trauma units are filled with motorcycle injuries, which he says is one of the big reasons why emergency rooms at private hospitals are almost always empty. But he says emergency rooms, both public and private, handle a lot of leg and foot injuries, mostly on weekends when guys who have had too much to drink stumble and fall on the pavement. And that's when ladies are out in force in their stiletto heels. Anyway, you could say Latin America is the land of high heels on steroids. Nothing wrong with that, but it could be dangerous in more ways than one. You just have to see it for yourself. Get your boots on the ground, or your high-heeled sneakers, or tacones. You know, that's what they call high heels down here. tacones, which also is the word for tack, like thumbtack. Guess that paints the picture, right? Speaking of hospital and healthcare-related stuff, you've certainly heard me talk about lag time over and over again and how things eventually get down here to Latin America. It might take 6 months, might take 20 years. It always amazes me that none of the big pharma companies, the transnationals, have been able to commercialize any of their prescription drugs on Latin American TV. They just haven't been able to make any inroads or break into the market. There's just no comparison at all to the crazy drug ads you're bombarded with every hour of every day. And you know, I'm reminded of that fact every time I flick through the channels myself. Now, where I live, I have this standard cheap-ass Latin basic cable, which runs around 12 or 13 bucks a month. Only three of them are in English, and they come from the capital of Latin America in the U.S., Miami. So I've got CBS, NBC, and ABC coming out of Miami in English. And every time I land on one of those channels, there's one thing I can't help but notice. Every third commercial is about some prescription drug I've never heard of for some kind of new disease or ailment that didn't exist when I lived back up in the States a couple decades ago. And you know, when I contrast mindless first world TV to mindless third world TV, I have to say, as much as the production values and the talent down here really stink, I mean, a high school AV department could do better in most cases. Aside from that, Latins don't know how lucky they are that Big Pharma hasn't invaded their airwaves and their culture, too. Oh, they're all down here, all right. Abbott, Merck, Sandoz, Burroughs, Wellcome, etc. They're producing, they've got big factories here, but the product is being shipped to the brainwashed and addicted first world. Oddly enough, with all their manufacturing facilities here in Latin America, they've only managed to make their mark in common, non-prescription, over-the-counter stuff. So yes, there are many Big Pharma TV commercials, but it's all about the old traditional stuff. Toothpaste, mouthwash, antacids, skin creams, feminine products. And the commercials, well, they're idiotic and dumbed down. But I do have a personal favorite. It's for a product called Milorix HC. M-I-L-O-R-I-X HC. The commercial starts out in a modern call center office with a bunch of people sitting in little cubicles. They show a guy in his cubicle starting to sweat. He's all stressed out. He stands up, looks down at the seat of his chair, and suddenly, shards of glass start growing out of the seat. Then, in front of all the office workers, he gets down on the floor, starts scooting around the office on his butt, like a dog that's trying to scratch an unmentionable itch. It's a hemorrhoid commercial. Weirdest attention grabber I've ever seen. In fact, when gringos first see this commercial, they think it's gotta be some kind of comedy skit from Saturday Night Live or something, but it's not. So that's about how far Big Pharma has penetrated the Latin American market. Hemorrhoid products, antacids, deodorants, facial creams, and vitamins. Truly television like it was back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. So what happened to American first world television? How did all those prescription drug commercials get on the air? When I was a kid, they allowed cigarette commercials of all kinds, but prescription drug commercials, that kind of stuff, just wasn't allowed. Well, I understand now that during the Clinton administration, a law was passed that gave pharmaceutical companies, for the first time, the right to advertise that stuff. Reason number 5,276, not to vote to continue the Clinton dynasty. Now, of course, your average first world brainwashed person, one of the sheeple, would certainly be confused if you tried to explain to him or her that it was the American Psychiatric Association, along with Big Pharma, that labeled and basically invented many of these new phantom diseases that didn't exist a couple of decades ago. And isn't it funny that soon thereafter, there's an expensive toxic pill that you'll have to take the rest of your life? They call that the Hegelian dialectic, right? You philosophy majors out there will know all about that. In a nutshell, as applied to this case, it's when big government or big pharma create a problem that they've already got a solution in the wings for. With big pharma, for example, restless leg syndrome. They've got a pill for that. By the way, I was afflicted with that new ailment before it was an ailment. Yep, restless leg syndrome. Who'da thunk, huh? You know, until the geniuses at big pharma claimed it was a disease, I just thought my motor idled a little higher than the next guy's. Wait a minute. You think I'll have to put that down on my McDonald's application? So I wonder then, if I die, will that be in my autopsy report? Yep, I can see it all now. Johnny Mueller, dead of a heart attack complicated by restless leg syndrome. Poor unfortunate fellow. Was he a member of Restless Leg Anonymous? I think not. He was a nonconformist. Surely he never followed through on that 12-step program. Restless Leg? 12-step program? Forget about it. Anyway, unfortunately, in their quest to copy and assimilate everything and anything first world, Latins too will eventually come to believe they have ailments like that and they'll need the necessary big pharma treatment. Yep, they'll swallow the propaganda and the pills, hook, line, and sinker, just like most first world people do. Though, thankfully, that's a long way off, except for that maybe 1 to 3% of the Latin Americans who have real money. You know, the ones that speak some English, go shopping in my jammy a couple of times a year, and, well, spend their whole lives trying to copy everything first world gringos so they can prove to their neighbors that they are virtual gringos and have virtual gringo status. And although it's laughable, even ridiculous to us, it's a very serious thing to them. Now, you new listeners, tuning in maybe for the first time, might think I'm a jerk or an ass for saying such things. But remember, I've been living down here 27 years now. And it's true, when you first get down here, you just don't notice those things. You're still trying to find your footing and kind of maneuvering with the language and such. But believe me, after a while, most gringos come up with the same hypothesis. For example, not 3 days ago, I got a phone call from a gringo who's been down here a little over a year now. Came to one of my earlier expat insider seminars, and he moved his family down here for good. And you know what he said to me on the phone? Johnny, took me a year dealing with Latins, mostly educated high-end Latins, and you know what? I get it. I get what you're saying. I'm seeing that Latin mindset you always talk about. Even educated Latins with seemingly thriving businesses don't have all the first world pieces of the puzzle together. Doesn't matter how rich their parents are or what high-end helicopter schools they went through, even if they spent some years up in a first world university. They're short on the details. So he said, I see that now. I get it. But where were we? Oh yeah. So the fact is, 9 out of 10 of the ailments that you see Big Pharma advertising treatments for every 10 minutes on your TV channels just don't ever show up on Latin TV. Not at all. Now, on occasion, a so-called enlightened, educated Latin person will say, hey, you know, Johnny, it just ain't right. I take that back. Latins don't say ain't, even the educated ones, since at high-end schools they teach proper English, not Johnny's English. Anyway, recently an upscale Latin who owned his own business said this to me. You know, Johnny, too bad we're such a backward country, or Latin America is such a backward region. Then we'd have all that modern, up-to-date pharmaceutical stuff, too. Yep, gringo wannabes, one and all. And here's what I told him. I said, Nestor, did you know that your country's life expectancy is about exactly the same as the life expectancy of a North American? And we're the ones on all those expensive prescription drugs you've never even heard of. And you've got 10, 20, even 30% of your population living on $2 a day. Meanwhile, people on welfare in the States and those working minimum wage are making at least $50 a day. How can you explain that? Which country do you think has the better old age quality of life, the U.S. or your country? Then he said in a split second, why, your country, of course. I asked him for an example and he didn't have one, but said, Johnny, it's America for Christ's sakes. You got the best of, well, everything. Then I quickly pointed out that my own brother, who was a superb athlete in his younger years and is now in his early 50s, is on 10 prescription medications, up from around 6 medications 2 or 3 years ago. He's got high blood pressure, gout, thyroid problems, arthritis, insomnia, depression, gastric reflux, knee problems, and backaches. He's got all the modern diseases, the usual suspects, and is on the usual suspect prescription medications. Yep, and he still lives what you might call a pretty normal life. But really, what's normal about that? Then there's my other brother who's in his late 40s. He's only on 4 prescription medicines. Had a couple of heart stents already, too. Also, an award-winning athlete in his younger days. Yep, the miracles of modern first world medicine, huh? So am I supposed to feel good that I've got two brothers that are victims of the medical industrial complex up in the first world? They're in good hands, right? Oh, and of course, as for me, I take no prescription medicine. And I don't dibble-dabble with the hemorrhoid cures either. Dibble-dabble. Wrong choice of words. Oh, and speaking of hemorrhoids, in the old days known as piles, a pharmacist I know down here told me that 10 years ago, there was really no call to stock more than one brand of hemorrhoid medicine. And that stuff, he said, just sat there and gathered dust. However, these days, it's a funny coincidence, he says. Ever since Latins have had the extra spending money to toss their traditional diets aside for junk food and more or less fast food diets, gastric problems and hemorrhoids are big business at the pharmacies. So, bottom line, he says people have enough money for junk food, but they don't have enough money for prescription drugs. So, though it's sad and it's a pity that the average Latin only makes around $300 to $400 a month, the good news is, because of that, Big Pharma has not penetrated the market, and it looks like they won't for a long, long time. Why? It's obvious. There's no money in it. You can't get blood from a stone. Not to mention, only 2 to 3% of Latin Americans have any kind of health insurance. That means no prescription medicine coverage either. Okay, switching gears here, but not too much. I just came across an article today in the biggest daily Honduran newspaper. It starts with an unusual headline question. It asks, "Are you or your neighbor stealing electricity?" Wow, that gets your attention, right? Well, in this article, it says that in the country of Honduras, population approximately 8 million, it's estimated that year over year, the electric power company loses on average $15 million, specifically due to individuals and companies stealing electricity directly from power poles or by directly bypassing electric meters. Then it goes on to say, in Spanish of course, actualmente no se puede establecer este monto. In other words, they really don't know the correct amount, that $15 million is just an estimate. Then it says, the electric company itself really has no way of telling if people are stealing electricity, except when instances are reported by friends or neighbors. In other words, loose lips sink ships. For example, in the town of El Progreso, Honduras, a town of around 140,000 people, last year in 2015, 172 cases of stealing electricity were reported to the local electric company, certainly turned in by envious neighbors who weren't on that gravy train. Then it goes on to say most of the power theft occurs in congested poor neighborhoods where there's no zoning, houses have common walls and no formal construction plans, making the situation very difficult for technicians and experts to tell when and where electricity is being stolen. In addition, most of it is stolen at night and on weekends when electrical workers are off shift. But there's more. It says they suspect many of the illegal installations are carried out by former or present electric company employees. Then the article says, an electric company spokesman said, "You can always find someone who can do an illegal installation for a price." Now, if you live in a gated, guarded community, chances are slim that you're going to be able to cheat the power company. Those subdivisions are too organized and first world-like to get away with it. Though I personally know a gringo and a few Latins, including one who owns a substantial business, who get their power free or at a very, very reduced rate. No, not legally, of course, but they've been getting away with it for years. However, if you live in a middle or lower middle class neighborhood, there are bound to be people nearby who are stealing electricity. Could be the neighbor next door or the guy across the street. Most likely the guy who leaves his lights on day and night. Now, you longtime listeners might remember in a show probably 4 years ago or so now, I mentioned that an expat gringo teacher friend of mine bought some land, built a little house, and as the story goes, when his electrician was wiring his house, he asked my friend how big or small an electric bill would he like to have. And my friend said, "Why, do I have a choice?" And the guy said, "Yes." What a question, huh? And the teacher friend said, "What? What are you talking about?" He said, "Well, I could hook it up straight and you'll pay the normal rate, or I can wire the meter so you'll pay about half of that, or even less. And I'll tell you how to do that." But do note, my friend only received that offer from the electrician because he kind of buddied up to him, bonded with him, gave him coffee, a couple of beers once in a while, plus he spoke Spanish to the guy. That was the key. At least that's how my friend explained it to me. So here's how the electrician did it. Now, you probably all know that houses have both 110 and 220 volt services, right? But what you might not know is they call it a balanced circuit. There's actually two 110 volt lines coming into the house, a ground or neutral, and two hot lines. Each one of those is 110 if you put a meter across them to ground. But if you put a meter across the two hot lines, it's 220. Anyway, you can split out a 220 volt system into two 110 volt systems. He only hooked up one of the 110 volt systems through the meter, and the other one he bypassed completely. So pretty much half of his house was paying the normal rate for electricity and the other half paying nothing. Well, the electrician went around the house and showed him which outlets he would be paying for and which ones he would not be paying for, and told him if he really wanted to have a stupendously low bill, he was to use mostly the outlets that were free. However, he told him not to be stupid or greedy and go overboard with it. Someone might notice the discrepancy, like for example the guard at the guard shack who receives all the bills every month and hands them out to the owners, or perhaps the electric company would pick up on it themselves. Though the electrician assured him they were so disorganized that probably would never happen. So in the end, my friend was paying, I think, around $8 or $9 a month, and that went on for years. He showed me the bills. I couldn't believe it. Meanwhile, most other people in his gated, guarded community were paying $30, $40, $50, even $60 a month. And you know, for a while, I was jealous. Don't tell me you're not. Don't be righteous. Who wouldn't be? Okay, we're getting towards the end of the show now, and I'd like to remind you, you can still sign up for my January 2017 Expat Insider Seminar. It's been called by many the fastest, easiest, and best way to jumpstart your own Plan B. Besides that, what you really need is contacts and a network once you get down here. You can't do this stuff on your own, and that's what we're here for. So just go to www.thenewexpat.com and click on Johnny's 2017 Seminar at the top of the page. And while you're there, don't forget John Galt's famous pre- and post-seminar trips. It's a way to get the best use of your boots-on-the-ground time here in Latin America. Don't just come for the seminar. Take one of John Galt's trips and work on some of the other aspects of getting your Plan B down, like, for example, getting your residency started or a bank account, etc. Oh, and don't forget my YouTube channel. Just go to YouTube/TheExpatFiles and see all the fun slides and related pictures that go along with the show. Do subscribe. It's free. And finally, I hate to mention this again, but if you're getting any emails from an old site I used to be affiliated with, Expat Wisdom, they're not sanctioned by me. They're not authorized to use my name, my reports, or my mailing lists. So don't get suckered in by any pitch or promotion. The stuff's not coming from me. The fact is, if I'm going to offer any kind of extra promotion or deal, you'll hear it on this show first. It just won't come to you by email out of the blue. I'll always give you a heads up on this show. So don't get sucked in by anybody trying to use me, my name, or this show to try to get you to sign up for things or sell you crap. Hate to have to mention that again, but there are bad guys out there.
South of the border.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me. Just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.